KXEI celebrates International Women's Day.
Hi, this is Kelly Fryer, the CEO of the YWCA of Southern Arizona. In celebration of International Women's Day and Women's History Month, I'm interviewing local changemakers.
I'm here with Karen Francis Begay, who is the Assistant Vice President for Tribal Relations in the Executive Office of the President at the University of Arizona. Karen is a bridge builder between tribal leaders and the university, and in a lot of other ways as well. Karen, one of the most fun things that I've learned about you is that you were actually crowned Miss Native American University of Arizona 1985-86. Welcome.
Thank you.
Is that true?
Yes, it's true.
That's wonderful. I can see why that was the case. Karen, just tell us a little bit about what motivates you to do the work that you do at the university and in our community.
I would say first and foremost, I wanted to be in a profession where I was going to make a difference in the lives of young people. Growing up on the Navajo Reservation all my life, we had a real emphasis on education. I'm very fortunate to be a second generation college student. I have my own children who have also gone to college and achieve college degrees. And it's really rare that you have three generations of family from a very underrepresented population that achieves higher education. And so it was always taught to me growing up that education was key. But also in that I had a lot of role models in my family. My dad graduated with a bachelor's and master's degree at the University of Arizona. My mother did some college while supporting my father as he went to school. And I had a lot of aunties and uncles who also went on and achieved college degrees. But I would say that was possible because my 96-year-old paternal grandmother, who is still with us today, had always stressed education. And interesting enough, I had a conversation with her about her own early years in education. She went to school up till the eighth grade, but she said that she saw education as a way out of poverty, that she didn't want her children to be poor. And certainly her grandchildren, you know, to be less fortunate. So she kept emphasizing that education was the way out of poverty. That was a huge influence in my life.
So it sounds like your motivation to do the work that you do, building bridges between the Native American community and students and the university, really springs from your own personal experience. I think that's not uncommon for people.
I think, too, in a more contemporary society, we have a notion that we've referred to in the kind of work that I do called nation building. And so many of our tribal communities are striving to build better economies, a better workforce, because we also survive as being people who are very resilient in their struggle to, you know, be who we are, to preserve our identity, to preserve our culture, preserve our language. And so there's sort of this broader notion of self-determination. You know, we're taking control of our own destiny. And so within our respective tribal communities, we take immense pride, but also immense effort to nation build. And part of that involves that many of our young people have a pathway to access and success in terms of whether it's job training, certification, post-secondary education, and making sure that we open those doors and that they're successful when they come into mainstream education and achieve college degrees or get the skill and go home and do that nation building.
How do you measure your success? What are the outcomes that you look for so that you really know you're making a difference?
You know, it's a really good question because it could be something as insignificant as just getting an email from a student and them telling you how grateful they were that you connected them with all the right resources on campus and have been admitted to a graduate program in mechanical engineering at the U of A and are now working on securing funding so their dreams, you know, become realized. And I probably hadn't seen this student in close to a year, we had a conversation at a conference. We happened to be sitting side by side. He was a young Navajo student who had aspirations to go on to graduate school. And I said, you know, we have a wonderful STEM education program, and we even have full fellowships for Native students that go into STEM education. You know, I'd really like you to consider. Here's some names, some contacts. And I hadn't seen or talked to him until receiving an email just the other day telling me that, you know, he was accepted into our engineering program. So for me, you know, that means a lot that there's one more student that will come into higher education. And I'm absolutely certain he'll be successful because, again, we need that kind of expertise. And I guess in terms of just looking at the bigger picture, as far as success, I would say even let's just focus on Arizona. You know, it's a, you know, often sometimes controversial state that seems to maybe resist a lot of change, I think, especially when you deal with populations that have been misrepresented, stereotyped for a long time. And so one of the policies I'm really proud of that we've changed for the state of Arizona is that we have looked at our residency policy. And we have now revised policy where a Native American student who lives out of state can now receive in-state tuition as long as they are an enrolled member of one of Arizona's 22 federally recognized tribes. So we had a struggle there for a long time because we had students who would move away with their parents, let's say to Washington, D.C., because they're going to work for the federal government. The job is based in D.C., that child brought up through the public school systems there in Washington, but wants to come back to their traditional homelands, wants to come back and have a connection with their community where maybe relatives, grandparents live, and would probably have expected they could come back and qualify for in-state tuition because they've never really severed their ties. But we actually would consider that state, that student an out-of-state resident. So we've changed the policy now where, you know, we do honor that these 22 reservation communities have traditional homelands in Arizona, and rightfully so, we should honor that by allowing the citizens of those nations receive in-state tuition.
Karen, your work is changing individual lives, and also, it sounds like, changing systems. Are there some other recommendations? Do you have a wish list of things that could be different? What would they be?
Well, I certainly want there to be more students successfully graduating from college. I mean, it's kind of a national effort that we want to see more students have successful completion in post-secondary education. We don't really have, I guess, a tough job recruiting them. It's that once they get into college settings, we have a difficult time graduating them. So I'm definitely on the bandwagon with ensuring that we're finding ways that we can create supportive campus climate for them when they come to our universities. But I think more so too, I read a lot of policy, I read a lot of reports, I try to keep up to date on current issues that are happening in higher education. And so with that, you know, a lot of funding and a lot of decisions are made what is reported in research or in the data. And so oftentimes, because our Native American population is very small, we're not represented in those data reports. Mm. Our numbers are insignificant to the type of data collection that's happening. So I attend a lot of national meetings where they'll represent numbers on other underrepresented groups. And I can't help but jump up and wave my arms and say, look, you know, we do have a Native population in this country.
Right.
Our students have a right to be heard and to be represented. And so you need to go back and figure out how you represent those numbers. So there's still a larger notion that we even exist.
All right.
But also there's this concept that my colleagues and I refer to is that we're not an asterisk. So in a lot of the research, you know, you see the asterisks
right.
when there's absence of that data, or there might be maybe some type of other way to interpret the data. But for us as Native Americans, it's often that the sample size was too small or insignificant. So how can policymakers or funders, you know, really see that there's a pressing need? So we're always pushing that. We're always pushing that, you know, we're here. And I'm really proud that at the University of Arizona, you know, we have over 1,200 Native American students who self-identify, but we even go further in that we allow them to identify by tribal affiliation. And some institutions haven't moved in that direction yet. And so we've really made some good strides.
What is the next big thing you're dreaming about? What's next for you?
Well, I've set out a personal goal for myself to pursue a PhD. I decided this about 3 years ago when all of my children were grown and sort of didn't need that constant, you know, parental oversight, although I will say maybe they still do from time to time. But I love learning. I found myself sort of, you know, being self-taught. And so I had several mentors and, of course, faculty who I work with on campus say, you know, you really should consider a PhD program and just get those three letters behind your name. It will open so many more doors for you. And so I'm currently pursuing a PhD in higher education. I guess at this point, I'm a PhD candidate, which means now I just got to write this multi-hundred page dissertation.
I feel your pain.
But, you know, I'm really excited about it. It's a little bit of a challenge because working full time and trying to carve out time for research, you know, I've really got to be disciplined. But I also like giving back to community. I like doing community service projects, sitting on boards. And again, it all has to do with having representation of our population. So my next big dream is to finish that PhD.
Is there anything that you'd like our listeners to hear, to know, to be thinking about?
Well, I think it gets back to just some basic things. You know, here we are in the state of Arizona. And as I mentioned before, we have 22 federally recognized tribes in the state. So I like the audience listeners to be well aware of that magic 22 number. But we also have a significant tribal land base here in the state. We probably have about 32% of Arizona's land base. And so that impacts a lot of policies with regards to water, transportation, healthcare. And so, again, I think knowing the demographics mm-hmm. of the state, but also understanding that our tribal population is very diverse. We have folks that live in rural communities, live on the reservations, but also live in urban areas. And so also that each tribe is different in their language and customs, their values and beliefs, even their governance structure. And so I think not lumping us all into one grouping, that we're all the same, but understanding that each tribe has its own distinct qualities and characteristics. I think those are really the main things.
Karen Frances Begay is the Assistant Vice President for Tribal Relations in the Executive Office of the President of the University of Arizona and a change maker. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Support for KXEI and this special International Women's Day program is provided by Marshall Foundation. Marshall Foundation enhances the lives of Tucson and Pima County women and families through the support and charitable organizations involved in education, social services, and early childhood development. I wanna see-